Well, I am so grateful to be here and so grateful that you're here. And I'm Carrie Browning. I live in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in the United States. And I do seminars on releasing toxic emotions, which is what this is. There's going to be three sessions. Each session will build on the session before. And I also do releasing toxic emotions appointments. And I'll be doing sessions with people while I'm here. And I also have a course, a certification course, where I train others to do what I do. And there's some people here that have gone through the course, so they're going to be able to do this work with people. And if you're interested in being equipped to help others release toxic emotions, you can see me during the break, and I'll tell you more about that, or you can go to my website. I travel a lot. I was a pastor for 18 years in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and a few years ago, I made a transition, and I've been traveling full-time now doing what I do. So I travel quite a bit, and I travel a lot in the United States and also internationally. And this is my husband, Mike, who doesn't like to travel. He takes me to the airport and drops me off, but he said, I don't like planes, and I don't like hotels, and I really don't like meetings very much, which is my life. But he's very, very supportive of what I do. And so we pastored for 18 years. We had a regional training center where we had people from all different churches come. We had a different speaker every week. We did conferences and seminars. And we also had an accredited Bible college. And I also started a preschool, a Reggio-inspired preschool. And I'll be talking a little bit about that. But this is what I do now full-time. And I love it. I love what I do. I love that this ministry is called Freedom Ministry. And that's really my passion, is to see people come into freedom. So this is session one, and each session will build on the last session. And I want to start with a prayer. And this is a prayer that Paul prayed for the church in Thessalonica. And it's out of the Message Bible, 1 Thessalonians 5:22 through 24. And so I'm going to just pray this for us. May God himself, the God who makes everything holy and whole, make you holy and whole and put you together, spirit, soul, and body, and keep you fit for the coming of our Master, Jesus Christ. The one who called you is completely dependable, and if he said it, he will do it. So he's going to make us whole. Spirit, soul, and body. So I have a question. If Jesus came to heal the brokenhearted and set the captives free, why are so many in the church sick, addicted, and even committing suicide? Have you ever wondered that? A while back, Charisma Magazine had an article. And the title of the article was, Why Are So Many Pastors Committing Suicide? And in this article, it said that 1,700 pastors leave the ministry every month in the United States. That's a lot. 70% of pastors fight depression. Now, this is our leaders, pastors. 71% are burned out. I know I was. When I was pastoring, I burned out. There was a time when my skin was literally burning from burnout. And 80% of pastors believe the ministry has negatively affected their families. Now, this is the leaders. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ted Haggard. This is Ted Haggard and his wife, Gail. There was a big scandal some years ago where Ted Haggard was pastoring the largest church in the United States. And he was the head of the National Association of Evangelicals, which meant he talked to the president regularly of the United States on the phone. He had so much influence. And it was exposed. And so what I'm sharing right now has all been shared publicly. He has shared a lot of this publicly. I'm not uncovering anything. But it was it came to light that Ted Haggard, while he was pastoring the largest church, was involved in homosexual affairs, and he was using drugs. And it became a huge scandal. I don't know if you heard about it over here in England, but a very huge scandal in the United States. And he lost everything. He was excommunicated from his church, lost all their friends, lost their income. His wife stayed with him. She actually wrote a book called Why I Stayed. And he ended up going to counseling. And later, he was on the Oprah show. Do you guys have Oprah here? he was on the Oprah show. And he shared with Oprah that he had gone to counseling, and he remembered in counseling that he had been sexually abused as a little boy on his father's ranch. He didn't realize how much it had affected him. So I believe that he was bound because of the wound that had happened to him. A lot of times the enemy comes in through the wound. He mentioned that he had asked some people in his church, some leaders in his church, for help. And do you know what they told him? They told him he just needed to get more busy. Well, obviously that didn't work. And it makes me sad because I think the whole thing could have been avoided if there would have been people that would have gone through my course and or who had been trained in inner healing, and they could have helped Ted Haggard. He's been restored. He's pastoring again. But he didn't have to go through all of that, I believe, if he could have went and got some help. We need to approach healing from a holistic approach. And I believe that, this is the reason why there's so many people in the church who are sick and addicted. It's because we haven't approached healing from a holistic approach. In the church, it's been thought that talking about the body isn't spiritual. When so much of the Bible is about dietary laws. So, but have you ever gone on a Sunday morning and had a sermon on nutrition? Very few churches teach on nutrition, teach on the body. Or have you ever gone and to a church where they've taught on emotions, which is the soul? Usually it's just things that have to do with the spirit. But we need to approach healing from a holistic perspective, spirit, soul, and body. The word healing means to make whole. Holistic healing is the art and science of healing that addresses the whole person, spirit, soul, and body. And it's just as spiritual to talk about the body and the soul as it is to talk about prayer. In a Hebraic mindset, they don't separate like we do in the Greek mindset. Everything is holistic, and we tend to separate things. The cause of disease is malfunctioning cells. Science will tell us that, that disease is caused by malfunctioning cells. And the reason that cells malfunction is either deficiency or toxicity. Deficiency is when we don't get the right nutrients, vitamins, and minerals that we need. That's deficiency, and that can make us sick. And the way that we eat is very different from the way our ancestors ate. We have so many processed foods and so much fast food, and our food is lacking nutrients and minerals. Then there's toxicity. And toxicity can be environmental toxins. We're exposed to so much electromagnetic frequency and chemicals and pollution, and all of those things can make us sick. But it's not just toxicity in the environment that makes us sick. It's also toxic emotions that make us sick. And when we have toxic emotions, it actually releases chemicals in our body that make us sick. So that's why we have to release toxic emotions. Sometimes we don't have much control over the toxins in our environment. We have some control, but we can control the toxicity of our emotions. This is my prayer. This is my prayer for you, and this is my prayer for the church. 3 John 1:2. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. This was a prayer that the Apostle John prayed. And it's interesting, he starts out, beloved. Most of the people I work with, they don't know that they are the beloved. They don't know it in their heart. They might know it in their head, but they really don't believe that they're loved. And that's the most important thing in the Christian life, is to know that we're the beloved, that we're loved. The Apostle John knew he was loved. He would say, in the Bible we read, John would say that he was the one that Jesus loved. That's how he identified himself. Do you identify yourself that way? Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm the one that Jesus loves. We need to know that we're beloved. That's how John identified himself. And he prayed that we would prosper in all things and be in health just as our soul prospers. And what is our soul? Our soul is our emotions. So when our emotions are healed, then we will prosper in all things. And that's not just financially, that's relationally and in every area we'll prosper and we'll be in health, just as our soul prospers. So when our emotions get healed, our bodies are healed. In Proverbs 4:23, it says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. So the condition of our heart is so important because everything flows from it. And the picture on the right of the heart, this is taken from Dr. Bradley Nelson. And it's a picture of a heart wall. And on every one of those bricks, you could write a toxic emotion. You could write bitterness. You could write shame. You could write guilt. You could write fear. And when we have a wall around our heart, it's hard for us to give love and receive love. And so what we do in releasing toxic emotions, we remove those bricks out of our heart wall. And sometimes those bricks are pretty thick, and it takes a while. We've got to take a hammer sometimes and just hammer those bricks, don't we? And when that wall comes down, then we can give love and receive love freely. But whenever we've been hurt, we put up a wall around our heart to protect our heart. We do it subconsciously. Have you ever met someone and you could feel their wall? It's because they've been hurt. So this weekend is all about healing our hearts. And I want you to think about your heart right now. Do you have a hard heart? Or an angry heart? Or a hopeless heart? Or a fearful heart? Or a broken heart? All of these can be healed. If you have a hardened heart, there's a promise in Ezekiel 36:26 where God said, I will take out your stony hearts and I will give you hearts of love. And we're told in Hebrews 3:15 not to harden our hearts. And again, sometimes we need help to heal our hearts. Maybe you have an angry heart. Sometimes you can be around people and you can feel their anger. And usually it's because they have so much unresolved hurts in their life and unhealed wounds. And some of that can come from injustice that's been done to them or favoritism. A lot of times in families, if one child is favored over the other, it will cause anger in the other children. Do you remember Joseph in the Bible? He was so favored that his brothers wanted to kill him. They tried to kill him. They were so angry. And so that can cause anger, bitterness, and resentment. And usually what I find underneath anger, because anger is a secondary emotion and there's usually something else underneath it, what I have found usually underneath anger is either shame, hurt, or fear. So if somebody's angry, always remember there's something underneath it. They're probably feeling ashamed. They're probably feeling afraid or hurt. Or if you're angry, always ask, what's really underneath this? Ask yourself, what am I really feeling? A lot of times it's fear, and it helps to identify it. In Hebrews 12:15, it says, don't allow a root of bitterness to come up and cause trouble and defile many. And many people let bitterness take root in their heart, and it does cause defilement. Some people have a hopeless heart. They can be depressed and despair. They can be apathetic and numb. Some people feel like they're dead inside. They've just so shut down their heart. Proverbs 13:12 says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And so many people have hope deferred. And then there's the fearful heart. And there can be fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of being humiliated, or if somebody's had a trauma and they've had shock and terror, and that fear gets frozen in their body, they can have a fearful heart. But the good news is perfect love casts out fear. And I believe that's knowing that we're loved with a perfect love. God is perfect love, isn't he? And he loves us unconditionally. And when we really know that in our heart, we're not afraid. The Apostle John, who I mentioned earlier, who really knew he was loved, he always identified himself as, I'm the one that Jesus loves. He was the only one of the 12 that went to the cross because he wasn't afraid, because perfect love casts out fear. He knew, the Apostle John knew he was loved, and he wasn't afraid. And that's our goal, isn't it? We want to come to that place where we're not afraid and we know that we're loved. And then broken hearts. And that can come through abuse or neglect or being betrayed. Betrayal is one of the deepest wounds of all. And a lot of times it takes time to heal from betrayal. Or rejection can cause a broken heart or abandonment. But again, the good news is Jesus heals the brokenhearted. Psalm 147:3. We're going to watch a little video here. I love this video. This is a video that was circulating, and this is such a good picture of getting our heart healed.
My mom told me it was wiggling, not raining.
My mom said it is raining.
It's wiggling outside, Macy.
Mommy
it's
said
raining.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, you're pretty.
And you're not real. I'm real.
It's just raining.
Ow!
It's just raining.
Little Clay.
It's raining.
You broke my heart.
little clay. She poked my heart.
Isn't that just the sweetest? And that little girl has such a gift of healing. You poked my heart. I love that. So our goal is to have a happy heart. A happy heart is good medicine, and a joyful mind causes healing. But a broken spirit dries up the bones. That's Proverbs 17:22 out of the Amplified. So we see in the scripture that our emotions affect our health is affected by our emotions. A broken spirit dries up the bones. Medical science is proving this now, that emotions, negative emotions, causes physical illness. But the Bible said it thousands of years ago, that a broken spirit or bitterness dries up the bones. So we're going to look at some causes of wounding now. One is generational trauma. We can inherit emotions. Did you know that? The Bible talks about generational iniquity, about the sins of the fathers being passed down to the second and third generation. Iniquity means like a twisted bent towards something. And science has just proven this. There was a study a while back with some rats, and they had these rats smell cherry blossom, and they would shock the rats when they smelled the smell, so that they started associating that smell with being shocked, and they would have a fear response. Well, after, you know, doing that, they took their offspring who never had been shocked, but when they smelled cherry blossom, they also had a fear response. And it went down five generations. And the headline in these journals was, "Science proves that fear is passed down through the DNA." But the Bible, again, said this thousands of years ago. The iniquity passed down to the second, third generation. So we can have generational trauma. Then there's prenatal trauma. And that's when you're in your mother's womb. If mom was stressed or was traumatized, it can affect the baby in the womb. I had a client come to me one time, and she told me that she had been in 23 car accidents, and only two of them had been her fault. And what I know is where there's fruit, there's a root. And that's always my job, to discover the root. And so I asked her, "Well, tell me about your childhood." And the first thing she said was that she had been conceived out of wedlock. And she was about my age. And back when we were conceived, there was a lot more stigma for being conceived out of wedlock. And I just had this knowing. And I asked her a question. I said, "Do you think that you're an accident?" And she burst into tears. That's what she had been told all of her life, that she was an accident. I believe she was drawing accidents because she believed she was an accident. Do you see how? But it happened even when she was in the womb. She knew she wasn't wanted, and she had rejection issues. Then there's birth trauma, and that can be trauma during the birth process. And it can affect us as adults. Or the lack of attachment. I had a child at the preschool. He was 4 years old, and he had been adopted at birth. And he had been adopted into a wonderful family. They loved him and took such good care of him. And at age four, we were doing a birthday party for him at our center. And it was this happy occasion, but he burst into tears. And he was sobbing uncontrollably. And because of what I know and what my co-director knew, we knew that he was remembering the day of his birth. Not consciously, but subconsciously, his body remembered. And so we think sometimes that that doesn't affect us, but our body remembers. Then there's adverse childhood experiences. We're going to talk about that. And adverse childhood experiences can be abuse or neglect or other things that happen to us in our childhood. And another cause of wounding is any traumatic event. And a traumatic event is an incident that causes physical, emotional, spiritual, or psychological harm. So all of these can cause wounding. So I want to talk about the effects of unresolved trauma. One is addictions. Addictions oftentimes are just unmet love needs. The inability to have fun or enjoy life. Insecurity, or the flip side of that is pride. And usually people that are prideful are really very insecure. Negative outlook on life, irritable and moody. Anger, which again, underneath anger is usually fear, shame, or hurt. Discouragement, depression, despair. You might be driven, a perfectionist, a narcissist, or a people pleaser. These are all can be effects of trauma and of wounding. Autoimmune diseases, eating disorders, the inability to give or receive love, or physical or mental illness can all be caused from wounding. Early childhood trauma really affects us because as children, our brains are just developing. So when things happen, when we're children, it affects us very deeply. In the United States every year, 3 million children are reported for abuse and neglect. I'm sure you have similar statistics here. 1 in 4 girls are sexually abused. I think that is much, much higher because I have people that come to me, both men and women, that sometimes they tell me I am the only person they have ever told. So a lot of it goes unreported. I think it's much higher. 1 in 10 who've been abused will commit suicide, and 3 in 10 will become alcoholics. And 1/2 of those who are abused will abuse their own children because we tend to parent the way we were parented, and the cycle continues. So let's look at early childhood trauma. What causes early childhood trauma? Again, abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, abandonment or neglect, witnessing domestic violence or another family member being abused. It's just as traumatic if you saw mom being abused or a sibling being abused as if you were abused. Parents divorcing, a parent in prison. They actually say that is the most traumatic, is having a parent in prison. Natural disasters like floods, fires, earthquakes, tornadoes, which is happening all over the world. There's so much trauma from people going through natural disasters. And war. When I was in South Africa last year, I did appointments with some adults that were having panic attacks because they were children during the war in Rhodesia, and it was affecting them as adults. An attack by an animal, witnessing violence, and so much now children witness violence on television, and that can cause trauma too, or in video games, witnessing it, or actually witnessing it. Being kidnapped, being bullied, which is just very rampant. And it's not just being bullied in school, but they're bullied online also. Surgery, accident, or serious illness. Especially children, when they have to go into the hospital and they're really young and they don't understand why they're being left and why people are poking them and prodding them. It can be very, very traumatic. Homelessness, which I know you guys have a homeless problem here in your city, and it's rampant in the United States. There's many children that are homeless. It's very traumatic. And complex trauma is when you've had multiple traumatic events. There's, you know, sometimes as children, they'll be being abused at home, they'll be bullied at school, and then, you know, maybe they're put into the foster system. That's complex trauma when you have multiple traumatic events. There's a book called Scared Sick, and the subtitle is The Role of Childhood Trauma in Adult Disease. And this book is by Robin Carr Morse and Meredith Wiley. And in this book, there's a lot of studies and data proving that adult disease is linked to early childhood trauma. Lots of medical studies, lots of data on this. And this is a quote from their book. They said, studies have proven that stress and fear experienced in utero and in infancy and early childhood lie at the root of numerous diseases and emotional problems. Childhood trauma triggers toxic stress responses that can pave the way to chronic illnesses. So a lot of times people that have chronic illness, it's rooted in early childhood trauma. So let's look at some of the effects of trauma. Difficulty sleeping, eating, digesting, eliminating, or focusing. A heightened startle response or hyper-alertness. If you've been traumatized, a lot of times you're just on hyper-alert all the time. Agitation and over-arousal. Or the opposite, under-arousal, withdrawal, or disassociation. Shame, which can manifest in the avoidance of eye contact or a very poor self-image. The inability to trust. Children oftentimes will regress to earlier developmental stages. Maybe they'll start bedwetting after they've been traumatized, when they're older. Inattentiveness, ADD. Hyperactive, ADHD, which is just rampant right now. I think the statistic in the United States is 1 in 50 children are being diagnosed. No, I think it's 1 in 10. It's 1 in 50 are on the autism spectrum. 1 in 10 have ADHD. So, and that's increasing rapidly. And I believe that it has to do with stress and early childhood trauma. Again, there can be toxins in the environment that will affect children too, but a lot of it is trauma. Nightmares, learning disabilities, and anger. And I told you that I oversaw a preschool for a few years, and that really was my learning, where I learned so much was in the preschool. And I had two little boys in the preschool that had so much anger. They both had fathers in prison, different families. And they both had gone to visit their fathers in prison. And when they came back, they were uncontrollable. And I had just read in a book I was reading that having a parent in prison, of all the things on the Average Childhood Experiences test, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, that having a parent in prison was the most traumatic. And they came back, and they were so angry that I had to let them go because they were, one of them gave two of my teachers a black eye. And they were hurting themselves, and they were hurting the other children. And so it's very, very common when children are traumatized that they have a lot of anger. And we're going to listen to a song right now. This is a Brian Dirksen song called We Are the Fatherless. And I believe a picture paints a thousand words. And that's why I like to play this video. So let's listen to this song and look at these images. But we are living in a time where we have a fatherless and a motherless generation. Do you hear their cry? Years ago, we did a conference and we called it the cry for spiritual mothers and fathers. And there is a cry coming out of this generation. I believe we can be the spiritual mothers and fathers. We need to get our hearts healed so that we can do that. Okay, we're going to look at the long-term effects of trauma now. Depression. People are 3 times more likely as to be depressed if they were abused. Personality disorders, such as borderline personality, paranoid personality, antisocial personality, bipolar can be from trauma. Obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Suicide can be a long-term effect of trauma. People self-medicate and they become addicted. They develop eating disorders and health issues. Have you ever heard of the the adverse childhood experiences test? This was a public health study that was conducted in 1998 by the Center of Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente, which is an insurance company. This is the largest, most important, I believe, public health study ever done. They surveyed 17,000 people, and they found a stunning link between childhood trauma and the chronic diseases people develop as adults, as well as social and emotional problems. So this was very groundbreaking. And when they did this study, they were just shocked at the statistics. If you had what you score on this test, the higher you score, the more likely you are to have an adult disease. And we're going to take this test together. And so if you have a piece of paper and pen, you can get it out. But if you don't, it's okay, because there's only 10 questions and you have 10 fingers. So you can count on your fingers if you want, or just count up. And you're not going to have to share this with anybody. This is just for you to see what you score on the adverse childhood experiences. So we're going to start with question number one. And if the answer is yes, give yourself 1 point. So while you were growing up, during the first 18 years of life, number one, did a parent or other adult in the household often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? If the answer is yes, give yourself 1 point. Number two, did a parent or other adult in the household often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you? Or ever hit you so hard that you had marks or were injured? Number three, did a parent or person at least 5 years older than you ever touch or fondle you, or have you touched their body in a sexual way, or try to actually have oral, anal, or vaginal sex with you? Number four, did you often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special, or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other? Number five, Did you often feel that you didn't have enough to eat? You had to wear dirty clothes and you had no one to protect you? Or were your parents ever too drunk or high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if you needed it? Number 6, were your parents ever separated or divorced? Number 7, was your mother or stepmother often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Or sometimes or often kicked, bitten, hit with a fist, or hit with something hard? Or ever repeatedly hit at least for a few minutes or threatened with a gun or knife? And that can be reversed. A lot of men are being abused these days too. Number 8, did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or who used street drugs? Number 9, was a household member depressed or mentally ill, or did a household member attempt suicide? And number 10, did a household member go to prison? Okay, now add up your yes answers, okay? And this is going to be your ACE score. And we're going to watch a video where a medical doctor is going to tell you about what your score means. I scored very high on this test. I scored 9 out of 10. I'd had a lot of trauma in my childhood. The thing that you'll learn is that your chance of having an adult disease is astronomically higher the higher you score on the test. And I scored 9, and I'm about to have my 61st birthday, and I don't take any medications, and I am in good health. And I really attribute that to the fact that I've done the work, I've done the inner healing work. And especially since I got introduced to the technique that I'm going to be talking to you about, 6 years ago, my healing has exponentially increased. But if we don't get the healing, the chances of having an adult disease, the higher you scored, even if you just scored 4 on the test, you'll find when you listen to Dr. Burke, you're going to see how much that can affect you. So we're going to watch a video right now where she's going to explain this. This is taken from a TED Talk. This is Dr. Nadine Burke Harris, or Nadine Harris Burke.
So I began reading everything that I could get my hands on about how exposure to adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of children. And then one day, my colleague walked into my office and he said, "Dr. Burke, have you seen this?" In his hand was a copy of a research study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. That day changed my clinical practice and ultimately my career. The Adverse Childhood Experiences Study is something that everybody needs to know about. It was done by Dr. Vince Felitti at Kaiser and Dr. Bob Onda at the CDC, and together they asked 17,500 adults about their history of exposure to what they called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. Those include physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, parental mental illness, substance dependence, incarceration, parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. For every yes, you would get a point on your ACE score. And then what they did was they correlated these ACE scores against health outcomes. What they found was striking. 2 things. Number 1, ACEs are incredibly common. 67% of the population had at least one ACE, and 12.6%, 1 in 8, had 4 or more ACEs. The second thing that they found was that there was a dose-response relationship between ACEs and health outcomes. The higher your ACE score, the worse your health outcomes. For a person with an ACE score of 4 or more, their relative risk of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease was 2.5 times that of someone with an ACE score of 0. For hepatitis, it was also 2.5 times. For depression, it was 4.5 times. For suicidality, it was 12 times. A person with an ACE score of 7 or more had triple the lifetime risk of lung cancer and 3.5 times the risk of ischemic heart disease, the number one killer in the United States of America. Well, of course, this makes sense. You know, some people looked at this data and they said, come on, you know, you have a rough childhood, you're more likely to drink and smoke and do all these things that are going to ruin your health. This isn't science. This is just bad behavior. It turns out this is exactly where the science comes in. We now understand better than we ever have before how exposure to early adversity affects the developing brains and bodies of children. It affects areas like the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure and reward center of the brain that is implicated in substance dependence. It inhibits the prefrontal cortex, which is necessary for impulse control and executive function, a critical area for learning. And on MRI scans, we see measurable differences in the amygdala, the brain's fear response center. So there are real neurologic reasons why folks exposed to high doses of adversity are more likely to engage in high-risk behavior. And that's important to know. But it turns out that even if you don't engage in any high-risk behavior, you're still more likely to develop heart disease or cancer. The reason for this has to do with the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, the brain's and body's stress response system that governs our fight or flight response. How does it work? Well, imagine you're walking in the forest and you see a bear. Immediately, your hypothalamus sends a signal to your pituitary, which sends a signal to your adrenal gland that says, release stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol. And so your heart starts to pound, your pupils dilate, your airways open up, and you are ready to either fight that bear or run from the bear. And that is wonderful if you're in a forest and there's a bear. But the problem is what happens when the bear comes home every night. And this system is activated over and over and over again. And it goes from being adaptive or life-saving to maladaptive or health damaging. Children are especially sensitive to this repeated stress activation because their brains and bodies are just developing. High doses of adversity not only affect brain structure and function, they affect the developing immune system, developing hormonal systems, and even the way our DNA is read and transcribed. So for me, this information threw my old training out the window, because when we understand the mechanism of a disease, when we know not only which pathways are disrupted, but how, then as doctors, it is our job to use this science for prevention and treatment.
If you want to watch the entire video, you can see it on YouTube at TED Talks. Fascinating information. Dr. Harris wrote a book. This is a new book she has. It's called The Deepest Well, and the subtitle is Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. And she's devoted her career now to finding solutions to the problem and being the solution. And there are task forces that are rising all over that are taking this data and coming up with solutions. In the city where I live, It's called the ACE Task Force, and it's made up of educators and doctors and people in the helping profession that are coming together to find solutions for helping people with this kind of trauma. Have you ever seen the movie Inside Out? Have you? Love this. If you haven't seen it, it's a cartoon pixel movie. It's about a little girl. Her name's Riley. And I took my granddaughter, who's also named Riley, to see it. In the movie, Riley's 11. My granddaughter's 10. But it takes place in Riley's brain. And this is a picture of Riley's brain. And these are emotions. Those things that look like marbles, those are Riley's memories. And there's anger and disgust. In the middle is joy. And then there's fear. And then there's sadness. And this movie is my seminar, in a nutshell. The person that wrote the movie consulted with neurodevelopment experts, and it is such a good way to understand what goes on in the brain. And it was made for children, but I think it really is for adults, too. So I really recommend it. We're going to see a clip now of the movie.
Fire! That's it. Go to your room. Now.
Foot is down. The foot is down.
Good job, gentlemen. That could have been a disaster.
Well, that was a disaster.
So your body stores every incident that's ever happened to you, including your feelings and emotions. And we're going to watch another clip from Inside Out. And this next clip is going to explain about long-term memories and how it'll show in this clip, explain how long-term memories work too. So
anyway, these are Riley's memories, and they're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag. But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories. Each one came from a super important time in Riley's life. Like when she first scored a goal. Oh, that was so amazing.
Hey, would you look at that? Very nice.
And each core memory powers a different aspect of Riley's personality. Like Hockey Island. Goofball Island is my personal favorite.
Come back here, you little monkey!
Yep, Goofball is the best.
Highly recommend the movie. It's very helpful in understanding what goes on with our emotions and our brain. The body remembers, stuffed until an event, a sound, a sight, a touch, or a word, or a person awakens them. So everything that's ever happened to us gets encoded in our cellular memory. And what happens is we get triggered. And then we have an overreaction to something, or we develop a health issue, or we can even have a breakdown. And it's because something's been encoded in our cellular memory, our body remembers, and then something will trigger it. I'm going to give you an example. Sometimes when I do seminars, I'll do a demonstration of what it looks like when I do an appointment with somebody. And I was in another city, and I had a volunteer, and she came forward. I had never met her. And what I do when I do appointments with people is I always start out with what's going on right now in your life, what's up on the surface, and then we look for the root. So I asked her, what's going on right now in your life? And she said that she was on disability because she had had a total breakdown 2 years prior. She'd been in the hospital because she had a complete emotional breakdown. I said, well, what was going on at the time that you had the breakdown? She said, well, I got a new boss at work, and she told me about this new boss and things that he had done. And it didn't seem like anything that would cause someone to have an emotional breakdown over. But I asked her then, tell me about your childhood. And she told, and she did this in front of the whole group, she told us that she had been sexually abused by a grandfather when she was a little girl. And she told us a little bit about that. And I saw an immediate connection to the boss. One thing that the boss did was he told her to do things and don't tell anybody. That's what Grandpa had done. The boss was buying her off with favors. That's what Grandpa had done. And I said, do you see the connection? Your boss triggered this memory from your grandfather. She had never seen it. She had been in therapy. She'd gone to many counselors in that 2 years. Not one of them had connected that she had been triggered by this boss, that it triggered her memory of her sexual abuse. But everything, where there's fruit, there's always a root. I see it every single time. Every single time. So that's what happens, is oftentimes we don't remember consciously, but our body remembers. And then something can trigger it. The thing that hurts us the most deeply is parental wounds. And no parents are perfect, are they? I know I made a lot of mistakes as a parent. But parental wounds really damage us. We're going to watch another video clip. And this is from a movie called Antoine Fisher. Has anybody seen that movie, Antoine Fisher? One person. You can get it, I think, you can order it. It's based on a true story. It's about a young man named Antoine Fisher. And his story is that he was conceived out of wedlock, and his father was killed while he was still in the womb. And then his mother was put in prison while he was still in the womb. And he was born, and he was given up and put in the foster system. And he, while he was in the foster system, he was in a home. Now, this is based on a true story. And he was actually put in a pastor's home where he was abused. He was physically abused and sexually abused. And so he ran away, and this is based on a true story. He ran away and lived on the streets when he was 14, and then he joined the Navy. And in the Navy, he was so angry, and he would get in fights all the time, that they sent him to the base psychiatrist, who in the movie is played by Denzel Washington. And the psychiatrist tells him that he needs to find closure, and he needs to go find his family, his birth family. And so the clip that we're going to watch right now is when he meets his mother for the first time. He's never met her before. And the uncle takes him to her house. She doesn't know that he's coming. And this is their interaction.
I used to dream about you. My mother, you know, what you be like, how you look, your voice and your smile, even your scent. For all these years, I wondered about you. I dreamed about you. Didn't you miss me? On the way to school each day, I imagine you were just around the next corner. When I get there, you would be there. And in my mind, you was always there. You just couldn't find me. So I raced to the next corner, and you'd be there. I know you would. Then you would buy me ice cream. And then you would take me home. I'm a good person. I'm a good man.
What we need from our mothers is we need eye contact, we need touch, and we need soothing words. And did you notice she couldn't give that to him? She couldn't look at him. She didn't touch him. She didn't give him any soothing words. This next clip that we're going to watch is quite different. He leaves his mother's house, and he goes to his father's house. Now remember, his father had died, but this is his father's relatives, and it's quite a different story. And I want you to look for the eye contact, the touch, and the soothing words.
Hey, what are you doing? I'm your Uncle Horace.
Get out of the way, Horace.
Come on, baby.
Here he is.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
I had a baby. Oh, baby.
My wife's
team. I am doing good looking.
Your cousin Eddie. My dad named me after your father. He's my brother Rex.
Hey, y'all, I'm your cousin Jason, man.
All right, boys, open up.
Hey,
Jason.
Hey,
quite a contrast, wasn't there? On the table, there was pancakes, because he had had a reoccurring dream as a little boy of someday meeting his family and eating pancakes with them. His girlfriend had gone on ahead there, and you saw that in the clip, and they had pancakes. And I like to say that the church shouldn't just be a house of prayer, but we should be a house of pancakes. We showed this clip one time on a Sunday morning, and then we served pancakes afterwards. But unfortunately, a lot of the church was like the first clip we saw, where there is just cold and there's not the warmth. But this is the way the church should be, where we're so glad to see each other, and it should be a house of pancakes, not just a house of prayer. In Malachi 4, verses 5 and 6, it says, "See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with a curse." It's the last passage in the Old Testament. I believe we're in a time where God is turning the hearts of the children to their parents, and the hearts of the parents to the children. So many TV shows and movies are about that theme, and I really believe that it's what God's doing right now. Frederick Douglass said, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken adults." So true. That's why I got involved in starting a preschool. Actually, I got involved through dreams and visions that connected me to the vision of this. And we had a preschool for a few years in our building. And these are some of our kids that we had. And during that 3 years, I learned a lot about early childhood trauma and about how it affects the developing brains of children. We brought neurodevelopment experts in who helped us develop our program. And I just saw so much fruit and so much change in these children. Tomorrow we're going to talk about tapping, but that's what they're doing here. It's called emotional freedom technique. But we really instilled self-esteem into these kids. One of the children in this picture, his mother was a drug addict, and she never paid her bill. But I allowed him to stay because I knew it was his only safe place. And these kids just got into my heart. Another child in the picture, his dad was in prison, and he was sitting on my lap one day. He said, "Mrs. Browning," he said, "I don't have my front teeth because my dad knocked them out." And he had such severe ADHD. He couldn't sit still for hardly any time. Cindy Culpepper, who I'll talk about tomorrow, she's from Mississippi. She's one who originally introduced me to the technique that I use. She came to visit, and she came and she was giving heart hugs to the children. And in a lot of centers, they don't allow you to touch the children. But we made sure that their need for physical touch was met. And these are heart hugs. When a hug lasts 20 seconds, there's a therapeutic effect on both the body and the mind. Now, this works for adults, too. It produces a hormone called oxytocin, which is known as the love hormone. And this hormone has many benefits in our physical and mental health. It helps us to relax, to feel safe, and calm our fears and anxiety. We all need hugs. It releases oxytocin, which is, again, the bonding chemical. In Psalm 22:9, it said, "You made me trust while at my mother's breasts." When a baby is breastfeeding, oxytocin is released into the baby's system and also into the mother's system. It's a bonding hormone, and it's helps us to trust and to connect. Isn't it interesting in this psalm, it said, "You made me trust." So that's when basic trust gets instilled in us. And if we didn't have that attachment with mother, then that gets disrupted and can cause much damage. One of my favorite quotes, Dr. Charles Raisin said, "One generation of deeply loving parents would change the brain of the next generation, and with that, the world." I believe this with all my heart. That's why, as parents, we need to get healed. As grandparents, we need to get healed. And then our kids will do better than we did, and their kids will do better than they did. And one generation of deeply loving parents would change the brain of the next generation, and with that, the world. I want to lightly touch on addiction issues. I mentioned that I believe addiction issues are unmet love needs oftentimes. Usually when I do seminars, I bring this basket, and I bring a big box of props. So I didn't, because I traveled from America, and my suitcases were already very full. But I want you to imagine, okay? Imagine that I have this basket here. and that I have a box of props. And what I ask people in my seminars is tell me things that people get addicted to. And as they tell me, I'll take it out of my box and put it in the basket. So tell me some things. Just shout it out. What? Huh? Sugar. I have chocolate in my box and I put it in the basket. What else? Alcohol. I have a bottle of beer and I put it in the basket. Cigarettes. I have cigarettes and I put it in the basket. Eating. I have comfort foods like croissants and french fries in my basket and I put it in the basket. What else? Huh? Work. And I bring an energy drink to represent work. That was my addiction, was work. I was a workaholic. Approval. That's a good one. What else? Exercise. I have a barbell that I bring and put in the basket. What else? Pardon? Phones. Yes. I have a cell phone that I put in the basket. Yes. Medication. I bring a prescription medication. I put it in the basket. Television. I bring a remote control and I put it in the basket. You guys are good. Yes, anger and self-pity would be another one. Shopping. I bring a catalog and I put it in the basket. Now we can shop on Amazon. What else? The internet. Yes, we can do that on our phones, or I could put the computer in the basket. How many of us are addicted to Facebook? Do you know what I read? Oxytocin gets released when you're doing Facebook. That's why we get addicted to it. Because we're connecting and bonding. So that's why it literally causes a hormone to be released when we're on Facebook. I've been addicted for 5 years. What else? Video games. And that's really changing the brains of children that are playing them nonstop 24/7. You know, it releases dopamine in their brains when they're playing these, especially like violent video games. And what happens is they get addicted to the dopamine. And then they go to school and it's just so boring because it's not fast-paced like their video game. And they need a dopamine rush. What else? Sex. I have a Barbie in my and I put in my basket. Sex. A lot of people are addicted to sex and pornography. There's one that you guys haven't said yet. Drugs, yes. You got it. I have a Jesus candle that I put in the basket, or a big fat Bible. We can get addicted to religion, going to meetings all the time. Not that it's bad. None of these things are bad in themselves. It's just when we misuse them. And so we use it so we don't feel. Okay, you guys are good. Dr. Gabor Mate, who works with, he's a medical doctor and he's written books on addiction and has worked for years in this field. He says, I never ask why the addiction. He said, I always ask why the pain. Never why the addiction, but why the pain. So in that basket, a lot of times when people come into church, we start telling them, you can't do this, you can't do that. And we take all their stuff out of their basket, and all they're left with is a big basket of pain, and they don't know what to do with it. We're all addicted to something that takes the pain away. Yoan Hari, he also has a TED Talk. It's one of the most watched TED Talks. He says, everything you think you know about addiction is wrong. That's how he starts out his TED Talk. Everything you think you know about addiction is wrong. And what he talks about is that he believes the antidote to addiction is connection. And he uses a story about Rat Park. And this was a true experiment. One of the reasons they made drugs illegal originally was they had done this experiment with a rat where they put this rat in a cage and they gave him two kinds of water. They gave him drug water and regular water. And the rat went to the drug water and was in a stupor all the time. And so they figured out from that experiment that if they made drugs legal, they believed everyone would be addicted, just like the rat. So they made drugs illegal. Well, sometime later, another researcher thought, well, what if the rat wasn't isolated in a cage? He made Rat Park, which was this huge environment for the rat, and he put other rats in there so that he had other rats to play with and mate with, and lots of fun things to do, lots of toys and things for this rat. And they had the two waters, and guess what? He didn't go to the drug water. He went to the other water. And they determined from this experiment that our environment plays a big part in whether or not we get addicted or not. And I think that's why 12-step programs are so successful, because people connect. And people come to church because they want connection. And it's connection a lot of times that helps people overcome addiction. But again, when people are hurt, a lot of times they put up that wall that we talked about, and they don't let anybody in. But it's the connection that people are looking for. I want to talk about moving out of the house of fear into the house of love. And again, normally I bring this with me, but because I traveled from America, it was too heavy. So you're just going to have to look at the picture, okay? Usually I build two houses in my seminar. One is the house of fear, and one is the house of love. And you'll see on the left-hand side there, the house of fear. On the bottom is generational curses and sins. That's what makes up this house of fear. And I talk about how we have to dismantle this house. And so we always start with generational curses and sins, that generational that we talked about that we inherit. And then on top of that, I put another block that says wounding. And we talked about the sources of wounding. And then on top of that, in those pillars, it says judgments, inner vows, lies, expectations, soul ties. And whenever we're hurt as a child, we almost always make a judgment. We usually judge mom and dad. A lot of times we don't remember it, but we judge and we make an inner vow and we say, I'll never be like that. Or I'll never marry someone like that. And the way the spiritual law works is whatever you judge, you either end up becoming yourself or you draw to you. So you either end up becoming like mom or dad, or marrying someone like mom or dad, or working for someone like mom or dad. I see it every time, every time. And I know for myself, I judged my mother. My mother was a perfectionist. My mother cleaned house 8 hours a day, every single day. She was obsessive. And I judged her for that. And I said, I'll never do that. Guess what happened? I became just like mom. And I was a Christian. I went for prayer. And I couldn't overcome it for a long time. Until I actually went through some deliverance ministry. And above these, I have demonic there. Because sometimes there's a spirit attached that has to be sent away. And the person that was ministering to me said, I've never seen a demon of perfectionism before, but it manifested. It was speaking through my voice. It was looking at her with eyes that weren't my eyes. And she had to send it away. And, you know, I know that's controversial. Some people think Christians can't be demonized. I was a pastor. And I got free. And, you know, sometimes we have to send something away. But if we don't destroy the house, what I've seen and what the Bible says is it'll come back. And sometimes it'll bring seven more with it. That's why we have to destroy the house that it lives in, so it won't have anything to come back to. And we have to fill the house. And that's the other side. That's the house of love. Would you like to move out of the house of fear and dwell in the house of love? That's our goal. And in the house of love, on the bottom, I have faith. And then above, those pillars are all like fruit of the Spirit: kindness, joy, peace, and mercy, and gentleness. Those are all part of the house of love. And so then I have hope in the middle. And then I on the top, it says kingdom. Because the kingdom of God is what? Righteousness, joy, and peace. How much are you living in the kingdom? How much joy do you have? How much peace? How much mercy and gentleness and kindness and loyalty and all of those attributes are you manifesting in your life? It's a good question. If you're struggling, if you have a foot in both houses, then you might need to have some heart healing and get healed so that you can experience the kingdom and dwell in the house of love. I believe King David is such a good example of this. King David in Psalm 23, it said that he said, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I won't be afraid. And then he says, you anoint my head with oil. And I'm going to be talking about essential oils and how I use essential oils to bring emotional healing. And it's all throughout the Bible. But King David said, you anoint my head with oil. And then he said, I will dwell in the house of the Lord, or the house of love, forever. And King David is such a good example. There's a scripture in Isaiah 16:5 in the Message Bible. It says, a new government of love will be established in the tradition of David. And David is an example of someone who moved out of the house of fear into the house of love. And that's our goal, isn't it? We either operate in fear or we operate in love. Philippians 1:9. This is my prayer, that your love will flourish and that you will not only love much, but well. And this is my prayer for all of us and for the church. It's all about love. If we're not growing in love, what's the point? I mean, what's the point if we're not growing in love and maturing in love? And many of us aren't operating in love because we haven't put away childish ways. It says in 1 Corinthians 13, doesn't it, to put away childish ways? Many people who are 50, 60 years old are acting like two-year-olds. And it's because they need heart healing. They need to put away their childish ways so that they can have mature love. So much of whether or not we're able to love or not is determined by how we see the Father. And oftentimes we see the Father through colored glasses. Oftentimes we see the Father through the lens of our earthly mothers and fathers. If you had an authoritarian father, you might believe that God is up there with a big stick ready to hit you. Or if you had an absent father, you might believe that God really doesn't care about you. So we often see God through the lens of our earthly fathers and mothers. I'm going to show another clip here, because again, I think a movie and a clip, movies sometimes speak to me more than sermons do. There's such messages in movies. And how many of you saw the movie Blood Diamond? Okay, this is a clip from Blood Diamond. Let me just set it up for those that didn't see it or don't remember. It takes place in Sierra Leone, where they were having a civil war. And this father, he's a fisherman, but his son was taken away from him. His son's named Dia, and was made to fight in the war by the rebels. And in this scene, you're going to see where Dia and his dad are reunited, and Dia's been with the rebels, and he's got a gun on his father. And his father starts telling him who he is. And we get 80% of our identity from our dads. They tell us who we are. So let's watch this clip.
Dia, what are you doing? Dia! Nyangbe, what are you doing? Bella Dia Avanti of the Proud Mende tribe. You are a good boy who loves soccer and school. Your mother loves you so much. She waits by the fire making plantains and red palm oil stew with your sister Nyanda. And the new baby. Cows wait for you, and Babu, the wild dog who wants no one but you. I know they made you do bad things, but you're not a bad boy. I am your father, who loves you, and you will come home with me and be my son.
Don't you love that line? I know they made you do bad things, but you're not a bad boy. I love that line. Many of us didn't have fathers who told us who we are, didn't instill that self-esteem. And many of us have been searching all of our life for the Father's blessing. A lot of times we're told in church, you know, just go to the Father and get it from the Father. But oftentimes it's difficult to do that if you don't get your heart healed. Because again, we see God through the lens of our earthly fathers a lot of times. So the next thing here is we're going to watch another music video. This again is Brian Dirksen. And it's called You Are My Son. And I want you to just allow the Holy Spirit to minister to you personally through this song. There's going to be some pictures up here. You can look at the pictures or you can close your eyes. And I want you to allow God to really minister to your heart through this song. My son put the pictures to this. There's actually a picture in here of my husband and my son on my son's wedding day.
Father, father me, I need comfort, I need shelter, I need healing for my soul. Take this fear that I surrender. Take me.
It's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God is turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. So glad we have so many men at the seminar. There's a cry for spiritual fathers. And even though we may not have got the blessing from our earthly father, I believe that we can get that from spiritual fathers too. And we can get it from our heavenly father. Our fathers, again, they give us 80% of our identity. They tell us who we are. So I have some forgiveness oil. And some of you may need to forgive mom or dad, even if you had wonderful moms and dads. It doesn't negate that they make mistakes. And so I have some people designated. They're going to go around and they're going to give you a drop of forgiveness oil. Before they do, I'm going to tell you what's in it. In this forgiveness oil, it's melissa, geranium, frankincense, rosewood, sandalwood, angelica, lemon, jasmine, Roman chamomile, bergamot, ylang ylang, palomarosa, helichrysum, rose, and sesame seed oil. So if you have an allergy to that, most people don't, but if you do, don't receive any of the oil. But what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to hold out your non-dominant hand, the hand you don't write with. It actually tells you in Leviticus how to do this. It tells you to put the oil in one hand, and then it tells you to use your pointer finger of your other hand and to spin it clockwise. That activates it. It's actually in Leviticus. It tells you how to do it. And tomorrow we're going to talk more about the oils. There's over 1,000 references in the Bible to the oils or the plants or the trees that make up the oils. And this is a blend that Gary Young developed for forgiveness. And I use this quite often on my clients and myself. And so if you guys want to go around and if you want to hold out your hand, if you don't want to receive the oil, that's fine. But they're going to just give you a drop or two on your hand. I want you to take your finger and I want you to spin it clockwise. And then what I would like you to do is I'd like you to breathe it in. And then you can put it on your heart if you'd like, underneath your shirt. Whatever you do, though, don't touch your eye after you've spun the oil because it might cause your eye to sting. It won't hurt bad, but if you have makeup on, it could cause your eye to water. So go ahead and do that and then just breathe it in. When we breathe in oil, it goes to the part of our brain, the limbic part of our brain, that will send it to the part of the body that really needs it. There's real science behind these oils. They're therapeutic. They're very pure, all organic. So smell it and breathe it in. And then I'm going to have you say some things with me. Forgiveness is the key, isn't it? And did you know there's an oil that can help you forgive? When I first heard about this several years ago, I didn't even believe it. I didn't even think that could be true. But I bought some forgiveness oil, and I put it on. And that night, I had a dream that took me into a deep place of forgiveness towards someone. And I awoke thinking, oh my gosh, this is real. This really works. And now I know a lot more about the science. Did everyone get some? Okay. We're going to say some things together. I want you to say after me, it's safe to express my feelings. Many people don't feel safe expressing their feelings. So we need to tell ourselves the truth. Let's say that again. It's safe to express my feelings. I choose to release the pain. You can smell the oil as you say this. I choose to let go of hurt. I choose to let go of sadness. And it is a choice. We're saying I choose here. I choose to let go of anger. I am choosing to be comforted. I am comforted. I am choosing to heal. My heart is healing. I'm choosing to forgive. I am forgiving. I'm choosing to be peaceful. I am peaceful. I am is a very powerful statement. I am choosing to love. I am loving. Okay. These are things that you can say to yourself, telling yourself the truth. I choose to forgive, and I am forgiving. We're going to end with this last song. This is a song by Misty Edwards. It came spontaneously in the house of prayer, and then she recorded it later. And it's called All Men Are Broken. And some of the lyrics say, all men are broken, and broken men break their children. And I know as parents, when we go to a seminar like this, it could bring up a lot of regret and a lot of guilt, because we've all made mistakes with our children. And it can also bring up a lot of pain, especially if you haven't been in a process where you've been releasing pain. It can, you know, I remember, you know, the first time I started going to seminars on inner healing, and I felt my heart was raw, and there was so much pain. And, you know, so at the seminar, it might be bringing up some pain. And I just want the Holy Spirit to minister to you through this next song. And this is going to be our closing tonight. But the song is powerful, and the words are powerful. And I really believe the Holy Spirit's going to minister to your heart through this. And if you want to get the song, it's on YouTube. It's called All Men Are Broken by Misty Edwards.
I'm not like your father. Listen, my beloved one. I'm not like your father, 'cause even the best of them are just broken brothers. Listen, my child, listen to me. I'm not like your father. Why are you putting that on me? Listen, listen.
He's going to turn it all around. He's restoring. He's going to make all things beautiful in his time. So we're going to close for tonight. I pray that you sleep well and come back again tomorrow, and we're going to focus more on how to release the toxic emotions too. So bless you. Thank you for coming.